Chapter 5. A Friendly Fire Accident. The goal of STAMP is to assist in understanding why accidents occur and to use that understanding to create new and better ways to prevent losses. This chapter and several of the appendices provide examples of how STAMP can be used to analyze and understand accident causation. The particular examples were selected to demonstrate the applicability of STAMP to very different types of systems and industries. A process called CAST. Causal analysis based on STAMP. Is described in Chapter 11 to assist in performing the analysis. This chapter delves into the causation of the loss of a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter and all its occupants from friendly fire by a U.S. Air Force F-15 over northern Iraq in 1994. This example was chosen because the controversy and multiple viewpoints and books about the shootdown provide the information necessary to create most of the STAMP analysis. Accident reports often leave out important causal information, as did the official accident report in this case. Because of the nature of the accident, most of the focus is on operations. Appendix B presents an example of an accident where engineering development plays an important role. Social issues involving public health are the focus of the accident analysis in Appendix C, Section 5.1. Background. After the Persian Gulf War, Operation Provide Comfort. OPC. Was created as a multinational humanitarian effort to relieve the suffering of hundreds of thousands of Kurdish refugees who fled into the hills of northern Iraq during the war. The goal of the military efforts was to provide a safe haven for the resettlement of the refugees and to ensure the security of relief workers assisting them. The formal mission statement for OPC read: to deter Iraqi behavior that may upset peace and order in northern Iraq. In addition to operations on the ground, a major component of OPC's mission was to occupy the airspace over northern Iraq. To accomplish this task, a no-fly zone, also called the TOR or Tactical Area of Responsibility, was established that included all airspace within Iraq north of the 36th parallel. See Figure 5.1. Air operations were led by the Air Force to prohibit Iraqi aircraft from entering the no-fly zone, while ground operations were organized by the Army to provide humanitarian assistance to the Kurds and other ethnic groups in the area. U.S., Turkish, British, and French fighter and support aircraft patrolled the no-fly zone daily to prevent Iraqi warplanes from threatening the relief efforts. The mission of the Army helicopters was to support the ground efforts. The Army used them primarily for troop movement, resupply, and medical evacuation. On April 15, 1994, after nearly 3 years of daily operations over the TOR Tactical Area of Responsibility, two U.S. Air Force F-15s patrolling the area shot down two U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopters, mistaking them for Iraqi Hind helicopters. The Black Hawks were carrying 26 people, 15 U.S. citizens and 11 others, among them British, French, and Turkish military officers as well as Kurdish citizens. All were killed in one of the worst air-to-air friendly fire accidents involving U.S. aircraft in military history. All the aircraft involved were flying in clear weather with excellent visibility, AWACS. Airborne Warning and Control System. Aircraft was providing surveillance and control for the aircraft in the area, and all the aircraft were equipped with electronic identification and communication equipment. Apparently working properly and flown by decorated and highly experienced pilots. The hazard being controlled was mistaking a friendly coalition dot aircraft for a threat and shooting at it. This hazard, informally called friendly fire, was well known, and a control structure was established to prevent it. Appropriate constraints were established and enforced at each level, from the Joint Chiefs of Staff down to the aircraft themselves. Understanding why this accident occurred requires understanding why the control structure in place was ineffective in preventing the loss. preventing future accidents involving the same control flaws requires making appropriate changes to the control structure, including establishing monitoring and feedback loops to detect when the controls are becoming ineffective and the system is migrating toward an accident, that is, moving toward a state of increased risk. The more comprehensive the model and factors identified, the larger the class of accidents that can be prevented. For this stamp example, information about the accident and the control structure was obtained from the original accident report, AGAIL. Government Accountability Office. Report on the accident investigation process and results, and two books on the shootdown. One originally a PhD dissertation by Scott Snook. Because of the extensive existing analysis, much of the control structure shown in Figure 5.3 can be reconstructed from these sources. A large number of acronyms are used in this chapter. They are defined in Figure 5.2. 5.2 The Hierarchical Safety Control Structure to Prevent Friendly Fire Accidents. National Command Authority and Commander-in-Chief Europe. When the National Command Authority, the President and Secretary of Defense, directed the military to conduct Operation Provide Comfort, the U.S. Commander-in-Chief Europe, Asensior. Directed the creation of Combined Task Force CTF, Provide Comfort. A series of orders and plans established the general command and control structure of the CTF. These orders and plans also transmitted sufficient authority and guidance to subordinate component commands and operational units so that they could then develop the local procedures that were necessary to bridge the gap between general mission orders and specific subunit operations. At the top of the control structure, the National Command Authority, the President and Secretary of Defense, who operate through the Joint Chiefs of Staff, provided guidelines for establishing rules of engagement. ROE govern the actions allowed by U.S. military forces to protect themselves and other personnel and property against attack or hostile incursion, and specify a strict sequence of procedures to be followed prior to any coalition aircraft firing its weapons. They are based on legal, political, and military considerations and are intended to provide for adequate self-defense to ensure that military activities are consistent with current national objectives and that appropriate controls are placed on combat activities. Commanders establish ROE for their areas of responsibility that are consistent with the Joint Chiefs of Staff guidelines, modifying them for special operations and for changing conditions. Because the ROE dictate how hostile aircraft or military threats are treated, they play an important role in any friendly fire accidents. The ROE in force for OPC were the peacetime ROE for the United States European Command, with OPC modifications approved by the National Command Authority. These conservative ROE required a strict sequence of procedures to be followed prior to any coalition aircraft firing its weapons. The less aggressive peacetime rules of engagement were used even though the area had been designated a combat zone because of the number of countries involved in the joint task force. The goal of the ROE was to slow down any military confrontation in order to prevent the type of friendly fire accidents that had been common during Operation Desert Storm. Understanding the reasons for the shootdown of the Black Hawk helicopters requires understanding why the ROE did not provide an effective control to prevent friendly fire accidents. Three system-level safety constraints related to this accident. 1. The NCR and Asensior must establish a command and control structure that provides the ability to prevent friendly fire accidents. 2. The guidelines for ROE generated by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with tailoring to suit specific operational conditions, must be capable of preventing friendly fire accidents in all types of situations. 3. The European Commander-in-Chief must review and monitor operational plans generated by the Combined Task Force, ensure they are updated as the mission changes, and provide the personnel required to carry out the plans. Controls. The controls in place included the ROE guidelines, the operational orders, and review procedures for the controls. For example, the actual ROE and operational plans generated at the control levels below. Combined Task Force. CTF the components of the Combined Task Force. CTF. Organization relevant to the accident and to preventing friendly fire. Were a Combined Task Force staff, a Combined Forces Air Component, CFAC, and an Army Military Coordination Center. The Air Force fighter aircraft were co-located with CTF headquarters and CFAC based on legal, political, and military considerations and are intended to provide for adequate self-defense to ensure that military activities are consistent with current national objectives and that appropriate controls are placed on combat activities. Commanders establish ROE for their areas of responsibility that are consistent with the Joint Chiefs of Staff guidelines, modifying them for special operations and for changing conditions. Because the ROE dictate how hostile aircraft or military threats are treated, they play an important role in any friendly fire accidents. The ROE in force for OPC were the peacetime ROE for the United States European Command with OPC modifications approved by the National Command Authority. These conservative ROE required a strict sequence of procedures to be followed prior to any coalition aircraft firing its weapons. The less aggressive peacetime rules of engagement were used even though the area had been designated a combat zone because of the number of countries involved in the joint task force. The goal of the ROE was to slow down any military confrontation in order to prevent the type of friendly fire accidents that had been common during Operation Desert Storm. Understanding the reasons for the shootdown of the Black Hawk helicopters requires understanding why the ROE did not provide an effective control to prevent friendly fire accidents. Three system-level safety constraints related to this accident. 1. The NCA and UNCINSUR must establish a command and control structure that provides the ability to prevent friendly fire accidents. 2. The guidelines for ROE generated by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with tailoring to suit specific operational conditions, must be capable of preventing friendly fire accidents in all types of situations. 3. The European Commander-in-Chief must review and monitor operational plans generated by the Combined Task Force, ensure they are updated as the mission changes, and provide the personnel required to carry out the plans. Controls. The controls in place included the ROE guidelines, the operational orders, and review procedures for the controls. For example, the actual ROE and operational plans generated at the control levels below. Combined Task Force. CTF the components of the Combined Task Force. CTF. Organization relevant to the accident and to preventing friendly fire. Were a Combined Task Force staff, a Combined Forces Air Component, CFAC, and an Army Military Coordination Center. The Air Force fighter aircraft were co-located with CTF headquarters and CFAC at Incirlik Air Base in Turkey while the U.S. Army helicopters were located with the Army headquarters at Diyarbakir, also in Turkey. See Figure 5.1. The Combined Task Force had three components under it. Figure 5.3. 1. The Military Coordination Center. MCC. Monitored conditions in the security zone and had operational control of Eagle Flight helicopters, the Black Hawks, which provided general aviation support to the MCC and to CTF. 2. The Joint Special Operations Component. JSOC. Was assigned primary responsibility to conduct search and rescue operations should any coalition aircraft go down inside Iraq. 3. The Combined Forces Air Component. CFAC. Was tasked with exercising tactical control of all OPC aircraft operating in the tactical area of responsibility. TOR. And operational control over Air Force aircraft. 1. The CFAC commander exercised daily control of the OPC flight mission through a director of operations. CFAC/DO, as well as a ground-based mission director at the Combined Task Force, CTF dot headquarters in Incirlik, and an airborne command element, AC dot aboard the AWACS. Operational orders were generated at the European command level of authority that defined the initial command and control structure and directed the CTF commanders to develop an operations plan to govern OPC. In response, the CTF commander created an operations plan in July 1991 delineating the command relationships and organizational responsibilities within the CTF. In September 1991, the U.S. Commander-in-Chief, Europe, modified the original organizational structure in response to the evolving mission in northern Iraq, directing an increase in the size of the air force and the withdrawal of a significant portion of the ground forces. The CTF was ordered to provide a supporting plan to implement the changes necessary in their CTF operations plan. The Accident Investigation Board found that although an effort was begun in 1991 to revise the operations plan, no evidence could be found in 1994 to indicate that the plan was actually updated to reflect the change in command and control relationships and responsibilities. The critical element of the plan with respect to the shootdown was that the change in mission led to the departure of an individual key to the communication between the Air Force and Army without his duties being assigned to someone else. This example of a synchronous evolution plays a role in the loss footnote. Tactical control involves a fairly limited scope of authority. That is, the detailed and usually local direction and control of movement and maneuvers necessary to accomplish the assigned mission. Operational control, on the other hand, involves a broader authority to command subordinate forces, assign tasks, designate objectives, and give the authoritative direction necessary to accomplish the mission. Command-level safety constraints related to the accident. 1. Rules of engagement and operational orders and plans must be established at the command level that prevent friendly fire accidents. The plans must include allocating responsibility and establishing and monitoring communication channels to allow for coordination of flights into the theater of action. 2. Compliance with the ROE and operational orders and plans must be monitored. Alterations must be made in response to changing conditions and changing mission. Controls. The controls included the ROE and operational plans plus feedback mechanisms on their effectiveness and application. CFAC and MCC, the two parts of the combined task force involved in the accident, were the Army Military Coordination Center, MCC dot, and the Air Force Combined Forces Air Component, CFAC. The shootdown obviously involved a communication failure. The F-15 pilots did not know the U.S. Army Black Hawks were in the area or that they were targeting friendly aircraft. Problems in communication between the three services, Air Force, Army, and Navy, are legendary. Procedures had been established to attempt to eliminate these problems in Operation Provide Comfort. The Military Coordination Center, MCC dot, coordinated land and U.S. helicopter missions that supported the Kurdish people, in addition to providing humanitarian relief and protection to the Kurds. Another important function of the Army detachment was to establish an ongoing American presence in the Kurdish towns and villages by showing the U.S. flag. This U.S. Army function was supported by a helicopter detachment called Eagle Flight. All CTF components, with the exception of the Army Military Coordination Center, lived and operated out of Incirlik Air Base in Turkey. The MCC operated out of two locations. A forward headquarters was located in the small village of Zaku. See figure 5.1, just inside Iraq. Approximately 20 people worked in Zaku, including operations, communications, and security personnel, medics, translators, and coalition chiefs. Zaku operations were supported by a small administrative contingent working out of Pirinklik Air Base in Diyarbakir, Turkey. Pirinklik is also where the Eagle Flight platoon of UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters was located. Eagle Flight helicopters made numerous, usually daily dot trips to Zaku to support MCC operations. The Combined Forces Air Component, CFAC, commander was responsible for coordinating the employment of all air operations to accomplish the OPC mission. He was delegated operational control of the Airborne Warning and Control System AWACS, U.S. Air Force, USAF dot airlift, and the fighter forces. He had tactical control of the U.S. Army, U.S. Navy, Turkish, French, and British fixed wing and helicopter aircraft. The splintering of control between the CFAC and MCC commanders, along with communication problems between them, were major contributors to the accident. In a complex coordination problem of this sort, communication is critical. Communications were implemented through the Joint Operations and Intelligence Center, JOIC. The JOIC received, delivered, and transmitted communications up, down, and across the CTF control structure. No Army liaison officer was assigned to the JOIC, but one was available on request to provide liaison between the MCC helicopter detachment and the CTF staff. To prevent friendly fire accidents, pilots need to know exactly what friendly aircraft are flying in the no-fly zone at all times, as well as know and follow the ROE and other procedures for preventing such accidents. The higher levels of control delegated the authority and guidance to develop local procedures to the CTF level and below. These local procedures included Airspace Control Order, ACO. The ACO contains the authoritative guidance for all local air operations in OPC. It covers such things as standard altitudes and routes, air refueling procedures, recovery procedures, airspace deconfliction responsibilities, and jettison procedures. The deconfliction procedures were a way to prevent interactions between aircraft that might result in accidents. For the Iraqi TOR fighter aircraft, which usually operated at high altitudes, were to stay above 10,000 feet above ground level, while helicopters, which normally conducted low altitude operations, were to stay below 400 feet. All flight crews were responsible for reviewing and complying with the information contained in the ACO. The CFAC Director of Operations was responsible for publishing the guidance, including the Airspace Control Order for conducting OPC missions. Aircrew Read Files. AFS. The aircraft read files supplement the ACOs and are also required reading by all flight crews. They contain the classified rules of engagement. Wrote changes to the ACO, and recent amplification of how local commanders want air missions executed. Air Tasking Orders. A TOS. While the ACO and ARFs contain general information that applies to all aircraft in OPC, specific mission guidance was published in the daily TOS. They contained the daily flight schedule, radio frequencies to be used, IFF codes. Used to identify an aircraft as friend or foe, and other late-breaking information necessary to fly on any given day. All aircraft are required to have a hard copy of the current ATO with special instructions. Spins dot on board before flying. Each morning around 11:30, 1130 hours, in military time, the mission planning cell. Or Fragshop dot publishes the ATO for the following day, and copies are distributed to all units by late afternoon. Battle Staff Directives. BSDS. Any late scheduling changes that do not make it onto the ATO are published in last-minute Battle Staff Directives, which are distributed separately and attached to all ATOs prior to any missions flying the next morning. Daily Flow Sheets. Military pilots fly with a small clipboard attached to their knees. These kneeboards contain boil-down reference information essential to have handy while flying a mission, including the daily flow sheet and radio frequencies. The flow sheets are graphical depictions of the chronological flow of aircraft scheduled into the no-fly zone for that day. Critical information is taken from the ATO, translated into timelines, and reduced on a copier to provide pilots with a handy in-flight reference. Local operating procedures and instructions, standard operating procedures, checklists, and so on. In addition to written material, real-time guidance is provided to pilots after taking off via radio through an unbroken command chain that runs from the OPC commanding general through the CFAC, through the mission director, through an airborne command element, ACE on board the AWACS, and ultimately to pilots. The CFAC commander of operations was responsible for ensuring that aircrews were informed of all unique aspects of the OPC mission, including the ROE, upon their arrival. He was also responsible for publishing the aircrew read file, AOF, the airspace control order, ACO, the daily air tasking order, and mission-related special instructions. Spins.footnote. The term procedures as used in the military denote standard and detailed courses of action that describe how to perform a task. Safety constraints related to the accident. 1. Coordination and communication among all flights into the TOR must be established. Procedures must be established for determining who should be and is in the TOR at all times. 2. Procedures must be instituted and monitored to ensure that all aircraft in the TOR are tracked and fighters are aware of the location of all friendly aircraft in the TOR. 3. The ROE must be understood and followed by those at lower levels. 4. All aircraft must be able to communicate effectively in the TOR. Controls. The controls in place included the ACO, AF, flowsheets, intelligence and other briefings, training, on the ROE, on aircraft identification, etc. AWACS procedures for identifying and tracking aircraft, established radio frequencies and radar signals for the no-fly zone, a chain of command. OPC commander to mission director to AC to pilots, disciplinary actions for those not following the written rules, and a group. The joie dot responsible for ensuring effective communication occurred. Mission director and airborne command element. The airborne command element. AC dot flies in the AWACS and is the commander's representative in the air, armed with up-to-the-minute situational information to make time-critical decisions. The ACE monitors all air operations and is in direct contact with the mission director located in the ground command post. He must also interact with the AWACS crew to identify reported unidentified aircraft. The ground-based mission director maintains constant communication links with both the ACE up in the AWACS and with the CFAC commander on the ground. The mission director must inform the OPC commander immediately if anything happens over the no-fly zone that might require a decision by the commander or his approval. Should the ACE run into any situation that would involve committing US or coalition forces, the mission director will communicate with him to provide command guidance. The mission director is also responsible for making weather-related decisions, implementing safety procedures, scheduling aircraft, and ensuring that the ATO is executed correctly. The ROE in place at the time of the shootdown stated that aircrews experiencing unusual circumstances were to pass details to the ACE or AWACS, who would provide guidance on the appropriate response. Exceptions were possible, of course, in cases of imminent threat. Aircrews were directed to first contact the ACE and, if that individual was unavailable, to then contact the AWACS. The 6 unusual circumstances/occurrences to be reported, as defined in the ROE, included any intercept run on an unidentified aircraft. As stated, the ROE was specifically designed to slow down a potential engagement to allow time for those in the chain of command to check things out. Although the written guidance was clear, there was controversy with respect to how it was or should have been implemented and who had decision-making authority. conflicting testimony during the investigation of the shootdown about responsibility may either reflect after-the-fact attempts to justify actions or may instead reflect real confusion on the part of everyone, including those in charge, as to where the responsibility lay. Perhaps a little of both. Safety constraints related to the accident. 1. The ACE and MD must follow procedures specified and implied by the ROE. 2. The ACE must ensure that pilots follow the ROE. 3. The ACE must interact with the AWACS crew to identify reported unidentified aircraft. Controls. Controls to enforce the safety constraints included the ROE to provide overall principles for decision-making and to slow down engagements in order to prevent individual error or erratic behavior. The ACE up in the AWACS to augment communication by getting up-to-the-minute information about the state of the TOR airspace and communicating with the pilots and AWACS crews and the mission director on the ground to provide a chain of command from the pilots to the CFAC commander for real-time decision-making. AWACS controllers. The AWACS Airborne Warning and Control Systems acts as an air traffic control tower in the sky. The AWACS OPC mission was to 1. Control aircraft en route to and from the no-fly zone. 2. Coordinate air refueling for the fighter aircraft and the AWACS itself. 3. Provide airborne threat warning and control for all OPC aircraft operating inside the no-fly zone. 4. Provide surveillance, detection, and identification of all unknown aircraft. An AWACS is a modified Boeing 707, with a saucer-shaped radar dome on the top, equipped inside with powerful radars and radio equipment that scan the sky for aircraft. A computer takes raw data from the radar dome, processes it, and ultimately displays tactical information on 14 color consoles arranged in rows of three throughout the rear of the aircraft. AWACS have the capability to track approximately 1,000 enemy aircraft at once while directing 100 friendly ones. The AWACS carries a flight crew. Pilot, co-pilot, navigator, and flight engineer responsible for safe ground and flight operation of the AWACS aircraft and a mission crew that has overall responsibility for the AWACS command, control, surveillance, communications, and sensor systems. The mission crew of approximately 19 people are under the direction of a mission crew commander. MCC. The MCC has overall responsibility for the AWACS mission and the management, supervision, and training of the mission crew. The mission crew members were divided into three sections. 1. Technicians. The technicians are responsible for operating, monitoring, and maintaining the physical equipment on the aircraft. 2. Surveillance. The surveillance section is responsible for the detection, tracking, identification, height measurement, display, and recording of surveillance data. As unknown targets appear on the radar scopes, surveillance technicians follow a detailed procedure to identify the tracks. They are responsible for handling unidentified and non-OPC aircraft detected by the AWACS electronic systems. The section is supervised by the air surveillance officer, and the work is carried out by an advanced air surveillance technician and three air surveillance technicians. 3. Weapons. The weapons controllers are supervised by the senior director SD. This section is responsible for the control of all assigned aircraft and weapons systems in the TOR. The SD and three weapons directors are together responsible for locating, identifying, tracking, and controlling all friendly aircraft flying in support of OPC. Each weapons director was assigned responsibility for a specific task. 1. The en route controller controlled the flow of OPC aircraft to and from the TOR. This person also conducted radio and IFF checks on friendly aircraft outside the TOR. 2. The TOR controller provided threat warning and tactical control for all OPC aircraft within the TOR. 3. The tanker controller coordinated all air refueling operations and played no part in the accident, so is not mentioned further. To facilitate communication and coordination, the SD's console was physically located in the pit right between the MCC and the ACE, Airborne Command Element. Through internal radio nets, the SD synchronized the work of the weapons section with that of the surveillance section. He also monitored and coordinated the actions of his weapons directors to meet the demands of both the ACE and MCC. Because those who had designed the control structure recognized the potential for some distance to develop between the training of the AWACS crew members and the continually evolving practice in the no-fly zone. Another example of a synchronous evolution of the safety control structure. They had instituted a control by creating staff or instructor personnel permanently stationed in Turkey. Their job was to help provide continuity for U.S. AWACS crews who rotated through OPC on temporary duty status, usually for 30-day rotations. This shadow crew flew with each new AWACS crew on their first mission in the TOR to alert them as to how things were really done in OPC. Their job was to answer any questions the new crew might have about local procedures, recent occurrences, or changes in policy or interpretation that had come about since the last time they had been in the theater. Because the accident occurred on the first day for a new AWACS crew, instructor or staff personnel were also on board. In addition to all these people, a Turkish controller flew on all OPC missions to help the crew interface with local air traffic control systems. The AWACS typically takes off from Incirlika FB approximately 2 hours before the first air refueling and fighter aircraft. Once the AWACS is airborne, the systems of the AWACS are brought online, and a joint tactical information distribution system, JTIDS 3-dot link, is established with a Turkish Sector Operations Center radar site. After the JTIDS link is confirmed, the CFAC Airborne Command Element, AC-dot, initiates the planned launch sequence for the rest of the force. Normally, within a 1 hour period, tanker and fighter aircraft take off and proceed to the TOR in a carefully orchestrated flow. Fighters may not cross the political border into Iraq without AWACS coverage. Footnote. The Joint Tactical Information Distribution System acts as a central component of the mission command and control system, providing ground commanders with a real-time downlink of the current air picture from AWACS. This information is then integrated with data from other sources to provide commanders with a more complete picture of the situation. Safety constraints related to the accident. 1. The AWACS mission crew must identify and track all aircraft in the TOR. Friendly aircraft must not be identified as a threat. Hostile. 2. The AWACS mission crew must accurately inform fighters about the status of all tracked aircraft when queried. 3. The AWACS mission crew must alert aircraft in the TOR to any coalition aircraft not appearing on the flow sheet. A TO. 4. The AWACS crew must not fail to warn fighters about any friendly aircraft the fighters are targeting. 5. The JTIDS must provide the ground with an accurate picture of the airspace and its occupants. Controls. Controls included procedures for identifying and tracking aircraft, training, including simulator missions, briefings, staff controllers, and communication channels. The SD and ISO provided real-time oversight of the crew's activities. Pilots, fighter aircraft, flying in formations of 2 and 4 aircraft, must always have a clear line of command. In the 2 aircraft formation involved in the accident, the lead pilot is completely in charge of the flight and the wingman takes all of his commands from the lead. The SEO, Airspace Control Order, dot stipulates that fighter aircraft may not cross the political border into Iraq without AWACS coverage and no aircraft may enter the TOR until fighters with airborne intercept. AI dot radars have searched the TOR for Iraqi aircraft. Once the iRadar-equipped aircraft have sanitized the no-fly zone, they establish an orbit and continue their search for Iraqi aircraft and provide air cover while other aircraft are in the area. When they detect non-OPC aircraft, they are to intercept, identify and take appropriate action as prescribed by the rules of engagement. ROE dot and specified in the ACO. After the area is sanitized, additional fighters and tankers flow to and from the TOR throughout the 6 to 8 hour daily flight schedule. This flying window is randomly selected to avoid predictability. Safety constraints related to the accident. 1. Pilots must know and follow the rules of engagement established and communicated from the levels above. 2. Pilots must know who is in the no-fly zone at all times and whether they should be there or not, i.e. they must be able to accurately identify the status of all other aircraft in the no-fly zone at all times and must not misidentify a friendly aircraft as a threat. 3. Pilots of aircraft in the area must be able to hear radio communications. 4. Fixed-wing aircraft must fly above 10,000 feet and helicopters must remain below 400 feet. Controls. Controls included the ACO, the ATO flow sheets, radios, if, the RO training, the AWACS procedures to keep fighters and helicopters from coming into contact. For example, they fly at different altitudes and special tactical radio frequencies when operating in the TOR. Flags were displayed prominently on all aircraft in order to identify their origin. Communication. Communication is important in preventing friendly fire accidents. The U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopters carried a full array of standard avionics, radio, IF, and radar equipment as well as communication equipment consisting of FM, UHF, and VHF radios. Each day the FM and UHF radios were keyed with classified codes to allow pilots to talk secure in encrypted mode. The ACO directed that special frequencies were to be used when flying inside the TOR. Due to the line-of-sight limitations of their radios, the high mountainous terrain in northern Iraq, and the fact that helicopters tried to fly at low altitudes to use the terrain to mask them from enemy air defense radars, all Black Hawk flights into the no-fly zone also carried tactical satellite radios. TACSATs. These TACSATs were used to communicate with MCC operations. The helicopters had to land to place the TACSATs in operation. They cannot be operated from inside a moving helicopter. The F-15s were equipped with avionics, communications, and electronic equipment similar to that on the Black Hawks, except that the F-15s were equipped with HAVQIC-2, HQ-2. Frequency hopping radios while the helicopters were not. HQ-2 defeated most enemy attempts to jam transmissions by changing frequencies many times per second. Although the F-15 pilots preferred to use the more advanced HQ technology, the F-15 radios were capable of communicating in a clear, non-HQ-2 mode. The ACO directed that F-15s use the non-HQ-2 frequency when specified aircraft that were not HQ-2 capable flew in the TOR. One factor involved in the accident was that Black Hawk helicopters, UH-60s, were not on the list of non-HQ-2 aircraft that must be contacted using a non-HQ-2 mode. Identification. Identification of aircraft was assisted by systems called AAI/IFF Electronic Air-to-Air Interrogation/Identification Friend or Foe. Each coalition aircraft was equipped with an IFF transponder. Friendly radars. Located in the AWACS, a fighter aircraft or a ground sight dot execute what is called a parrot check to determine if the target being reflected on their radar screens is friendly or hostile. The RI component. The interrogator dot sends a signal to an airborne aircraft to determine its identity, and the IFF component answers or squawks back with a secret code dot a numerically identifying pulse that changes daily and must be uploaded into aircraft using secure equipment prior to takeoff. If the return signal is valid, it appears on the challenging aircraft's visual display. Radar scope. A compatible code has to be loaded into the cryptographic system of both the challenging and the responding aircraft to produce a friendly response. An F-15's AI/IFF system can interrogate using 4 identification signals or modes. The different types of IFF signals provide a form of redundancy. Mode I is a general identification signal that permits selection of 32 codes. 2 mode I codes were designated for use in OPC at the time of the accident, one for inside the TOR and the other for outside. Mode 2 is an aircraft-specific identification mode allowing the use of 4,096 possible codes. Mode 3 provides a non-secure friendly identification of both military and civilian aircraft and was not used in the TOR. Mode 4 is secure and provides high-confidence identification of friendly targets. According to the SEO, the primary means of identifying friendly aircraft in the Iraqi no-fly zone were to be modes I and 4 in the IFF interrogation process. Physical identification is also important in preventing friendly fire accidents. The ROE require that the pilots perform a visual identification of the potential threat. To assist in this identification, the Black Hawks were marked with 6 2x3-foot American flags. An American flag was painted on each door, on both sponsons, 4 on the nose, and on the belly of each helicopter. A flag had been added to the side of each sponson because the Black Hawks had been the target of small arms ground fire several months before. Footnote. Sponsons are auxiliary fuel tanks, section 5.3. The accident analysis using STAMP. With all these controls and this elaborate control structure to protect against friendly fire accidents, which was a well-known hazard, how could the shootdown occur on a clear day with all equipment operational? As the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said after the accident, in place were not just one, but a series of safeguards, some human, some procedural, some technical, that were supposed to ensure an accident of this nature could never happen. Yet, quite clearly, these safeguards failed. 5. Using STAMP to understand why this accident occurred and to learn how to prevent such losses in the future requires determining why these safeguards were not successful in preventing a friendly fire. Various explanations for the accident have been posited. Making sense out of these conflicting explanations and understanding the accident process involved, including not only failures of individual system components but the unsafe interactions and miscommunications between components, requires understanding the role played in this process by each of the elements of the safety control structure in place at the time. The next section contains a description of the proximate events involved in the loss. Then the STAMP analysis providing an explanation of why these events occurred is presented. Footnote. John Shalikashvili, chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, from a cover letter to the 21-volume report of the Aircraft Accident Investigation Board, 1994, A, page 1, section 5.3.1. Proximate events. Figure 5.4, taken from the official Accident Investigation Board report, shows a timeline of the actions of each of the main actors in the proximate events. The AWACS, the F-15s, and the Black Hawks. It may also be helpful to refer back to Figure 5.1, which contains a map of the area showing the relative locations of the important activities. After receiving a briefing on the day's mission, the AWACS took off from Incirlik Air Base. When they arrived on station and started to track aircraft, the AWACS surveillance section noticed unidentified radar returns. From the Black Hawks, a friendly general track symbol was assigned to the aircraft and labeled as H, denoting a helicopter. The Black Hawks. Eagle flight. Later entered the TOR no-fly zone. Through gate 1, checked in with the AWACS controllers who annotated the track with the identifier EE01, and flew to Zaku. The Black Hawk pilots did not change their IFF. Identify friend or foe. Mode I code. The code for all friendly fixed-wing aircraft flying in Turkey on that day was 42, and the code for the TOR was 52. They also remained on the Umruk radio frequency instead of changing to the frequency to be used in the TOR. when the helicopters landed at Saku. Their radar and IFF identify friend of foe dot returns on the AWACS radar scopes faded. 30 minutes later, Eagle Flight reported their departure from Saku to the AWACS and said they were en route from Whiskey. Code name for Saku Dr. Lima. Code name for Erbil, a town deep in the TOR. The en route controller reinitiated tracking of the helicopters. Two F-15s were tasked that day to be the first aircraft in the TOR and to sanitize it. Check for hostile aircraft dot before other coalition aircraft entered the area. The F-15s reached their final checkpoint before entering the TOR approximately an hour after the helicopters had entered. They turned on all combat systems, switched their IFF mode I code from 42 to 52, and switched to the TOR radio frequency. They reported their entry into the TOR to the AWACS. At this point, the Black Hawk's radar and IFF contacts faded as the helicopters entered mountainous terrain. The AWACS computer continued to move the helicopter tracks on the radar display at the last known speed and direction, but the identifying H symbol for helicopter dot on the track was no longer displayed. The RSO placed an attention arrow, used to point out an area of interest dot on the SD's scope at the point of the Black Hawk's last known location. This large arrow is accompanied by a blinking alert light on the SD's console. The SD did not acknowledge the arrow, and after 60 seconds, both the arrow and the light were automatically dropped. The ASO then adjusted the AWACS radar to detect slow-moving objects. Before entering the TOR, the lead F-15 pilot checked in with the ACE and was told there were no relevant changes from previously briefed information. Negative words. 5 minutes later, the F-15s entered the TOR, and the lead pilot reported their arrival to the TOR controller. 1 minute later, the en route controller finally dropped the symbol for the helicopters from the scope, the last remaining visual reminder that there were helicopters inside the TOR. 2 minutes after entering the TOR, the lead F-15 picked up hits on its instruments, indicating that it was getting radar returns from a low and slow flying aircraft. The lead F-15 pilot alerted his wingman and then locked onto the contact and used the F-15's air-to-air interrogator to query the target's IFF code. If it was a coalition aircraft, it should be squawking mode I, code 52. The scope showed it was not. He reported the radar hits to the controllers in the AWACS, and the TOR controller told him they had no radar contacts in that location. Clean there. The wing pilot replied to the lead pilot's alert, noting that his radar also showed the target. The lead F-15 pilot then switched the interrogation to the second mode. Mode Roman 4 dot that all coalition aircraft should be squawking. For the first second it showed the right symbol, but for the rest of the interrogation, 4 to 5 seconds dot it said the target was not squawking mode Roman 4. The lead F-15 pilot then made a second contact call to the AWACS over the main radio, repeating the location, altitude, and heading of his target. This time the AWACS en route controller responded that he had radar returns on his scope at the spot. Hits their dot but did not indicate that these returns might be from a friendly aircraft. At this point, the Black Hawk IFF response was continuous but the radar returns were intermittent. The en route controller placed an unknown, pending, unevaluated track symbol in the area of the helicopter's radar and IFF returns and attempted to make an IFF identification. The lead F-15 pilot, after making a second check of modes I and 4 and again receiving no response, executed a visual identification pass to confirm that the target was hostile. The next step required in the rules of engagement. He saw what he thought were Iraqi helicopters. He pulled out his goodie book with aircraft pictures in it, checked the silhouettes, and identified the helicopters as Heinz, a type of Russian aircraft flown by the Iraqis. Tally 2 Heinz. The F-15 wing pilot also reported seeing 2 helicopters. Talitu, but never confirmed that he had identified them as Heinz or as Iraqi aircraft. The lead F-15 pilot called the AWACS and said they were engaging enemy aircraft. Tiger 2-6 has tallied to Heinz, engaged, cleared his wingmen to shoot arm hot, and armed his missiles. He then did one final node eye check, received a negative response, and pressed the button that released the missiles. The wingman fired at the other helicopter, and both were destroyed. This description represents the chain of events, but it does not explain why the accident occurred except at the most superficial level and provides few clues as to how to redesign the system to prevent future occurrences. Just looking at these basic events surrounding the accident, it appears that mistakes verging on gross negligence were involved. Undisciplined pilots shot down friendly aircraft in clear skies, and the AWACS crew and others who were supposed to provide assistance simply sat and watched without telling the F-15 pilots that the helicopters were there. An analysis using STAMP, as will be seen, provides a very different level of understanding. In the following analysis, the goal is to understand why the controls in place did not prevent the accident and to identify the changes necessary to prevent similar accidents in the future. A related type of hazard analysis can be used during system design and development. See chapters 8 and 9. To prevent such occurrences in the first place. In the following analysis, the basic failures and dysfunctional interactions leading to the loss at the physical level are identified first. Then each level of the hierarchical safety control structure is considered in turn, starting from the bottom. At each level, the context in which the behaviors took place is considered. The context for each level includes the hazards, the safety requirements and constraints, the controls in place to prevent the hazard, and aspects of the environment or situation relevant to understanding the control flaws, including the people involved, their assigned tasks and responsibilities, and any relevant environmental behavior-shaping factors. Following a description of the context, the dysfunctional interactions and failures at that level are described, along with the accident factors. See figure 4.8. That were involved. Footnote. Tiger 1 was the code name for the F-15 lead pilot, while Tiger 2 denoted the wing pilot. Section 5.3.2. Physical process failures and dysfunctional interactions. The first step in the analysis is to understand the physical failures and dysfunctional interactions within the physical process that were related to the accident. Figure 5.5 shows this information. All the physical components worked exactly as intended, except perhaps for the IFF system. The fact that the mode for IFF gave an intermittent response has never been completely explained. Even after extensive equipment teardowns and reenactments with the same F-15s and different Black Hawks, no one has been able to explain why the F-15 IFF interrogator did not receive a Mode 4 response. The Accident Investigation Board report states, "The reason for the unsuccessful Mode 4 interrogation attempts cannot be established, but was probably attributable to one or more of the following factors: incorrect selection of interrogation modes, faulty ETA interrogators, incorrectly loaded IFF transponder codes, garbling of electronic responses, and intermittent loss of line-of-sight radar contact." 7. There were several dysfunctional interactions and communication inadequacies among the correctly operating aircraft equipment. The most obvious and safe interaction was the release of two missiles in the direction of two friendly aircraft, but there were also four obstacles to the type of fighter-helicopter communications that might have prevented that release. 1. The Black Hawks and F-15s were on different radio frequencies and thus the pilots could not speak to each other or hear the transmissions between others involved in the incident, the most critical of which were the radio transmissions between the two F-15 pilots and between the lead F-15 pilot and personnel on board the AWACS. The Black Hawks, according to the aircraft control order, should have been communicating on the TOR frequency. Stopping here and looking only at this level, it appears that the Black Hawk pilots were at fault in not changing to the TOR frequency, but an examination of the higher levels of control points to a different conclusion. 2. Even if they had been on the same frequency, the Air Force fighter aircraft were equipped with have quick 2. HQ2 dot radios, while the Army helicopters were not. The only way the F-15 and Black Hawk pilots could have communicated would have been if the F-15 pilots switched to non-HQ mode. The procedures the pilots were given to follow did not tell them to do so. In fact, with respect to the two helicopters that were shot down, one contained an outdated version called HQI, which was not compatible with HQ2. The other was equipped with HQ2, but because not all of the Army helicopters supported HQ2, CFAC refused to provide Army helicopter operations with the necessary cryptographic support required to synchronize the radios with the other OPC components. If the objective of the accident analysis is to assign blame, then the different radio frequencies could be considered irrelevant because the differing technology meant they could not have communicated even if they had been on the same frequency. If the objective, however, is to learn enough to prevent future accidents, then the different radio frequencies are relevant. 3. The Black Hawks were not squawking the required IFF mode I code for those flying within the TOR. The Gale report states that Black Hawk pilots told them they routinely used the same mode I code for outside the TOR while operating within the TOR, and no one had advised them that it was incorrect to do so. But, again, the wrong mode I code is only part of the story. The Accident Investigation Board report concluded that the use of the incorrect mode IIFF code by the Black Hawks was responsible for the F-15 pilots' failure to receive a mode I response when they interrogated the helicopters. However, an Air Force Special Task Force concluded that based on the descriptions of the system settings that the pilots testified they had used on the interrogation attempts, the F-15s should have received and displayed any mode IR2 response regardless of the code. The AWACS was receiving friendly mode IN2 returns from the helicopters at the same time that the F-15s received no response. The Gale report concluded that the helicopter's use of the wrong mode I code should not have prevented the F-15s from receiving a response. Confusing the situation even further, the Gale report cites the accident board president as telling the Gale investigators that because of the difference between the lead F-15 pilot's statement on the day of the incident and his testimony to the investigation board, it was difficult to determine the number of times the lead pilot had interrogated the helicopters. 4. Communication was also impeded by physical line-of-sight restrictions. The Black Hawks were flying in narrow valleys among very high mountains that disrupted communication depending on line-of-sight transmissions. One reason for these dysfunctional interactions lies in the asynchronous evolution of the Army and Air Force technology, leaving the different services with largely incompatible radios. Looking only at the event chain or at the failures and dysfunctional interactions in the technical process, a common stopping point in accident investigations gives a very misleading picture of the reasons this accident occurred. Examining the higher levels of control is necessary to obtain the information necessary to prevent future occurrences. After the shootdown, the following changes were made. 1. Updated radios were placed on Black Hawk helicopters to enable communication with fighter aircraft. Until the time the conversion was complete, fighters were directed to remain on the TOR clear frequencies for deconfliction with helicopters. 2. Helicopter pilots were directed to monitor the common TOR radio frequency and to squawk the TOR IFF codes. Footnote. The commander of the U.S. Army in Europe objected to this sentence. He argued that nothing in the board report supported the possibility that the codes had been loaded improperly and that it was clear the Army crews were not at fault in this matter. The U.S. Commander-in-Chief, Europe, agreed with his view. although the language in the opinion was not changed, the former said his concerns were addressed because the complaint had been included as an attachment to the board report section 5.3.3, the controllers of the aircraft and weapons. The pilots directly control the aircraft, including the activation of weapons. Figure 5.6. The context in which their decisions and actions took place is first described, followed by the dysfunctional interactions at this level of the control structure. Then the inadequate control actions are outlined and the factors that led to them are described. Context in which decisions and actions took place, safety requirements and constraints. The safety constraints that must be enforced at this level of the socio-technical control structure were described earlier. The F-15 pilots must know who is in the TOR and whether they should be there or not, that is, they must be able to identify accurately the status of all other aircraft in the TOR at all times so that a friendly aircraft is not identified as a threat. They must also follow the rules of engagement, which specify the procedures to be executed before firing weapons at any targets. As noted earlier in this chapter, the OPCROE were devised by the OPC commander based on guidelines created by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and were purposely conservative because of the many multinational participants in OPC and the potential for friendly fire accidents. The ROE were designed to slow down any military confrontation, but were unsuccessful in this case. An important part of understanding this accident process and preventing repetitions is understanding why this goal was not achieved. Controls. As noted in the previous section, the controls at this level included the rules and procedures for operating in the TOR, specified in the ACO, information provided about daily operations in the TOR, specified in the Air Tasking Order or ATO, flow sheets, communication and identification channels, radios and IFF, training, AWACS oversight, and procedures to keep fighters and helicopters from coming into contact. For example, the F-15s fly at different altitudes. National flags were required to be displayed prominently on all aircraft in order to facilitate identification of their origin. Roles and responsibilities of the F-15 pilots. When conducting combat missions, aerial tactics dictate that F-15s always fly in pairs with one pilot as the lead and one as the wingman. They fly and fight as a team, but the lead is always in charge. The mission that day was to conduct a thorough radar search of the area to ensure that the TOR was clear of hostile aircraft. To sanitize the airspace before the other aircraft entered. They were also tasked to protect the AWACS from any threats. The wing pilot was responsible for looking 20,000 feet and higher with his radar, while the lead pilot was responsible for the area 25,000 feet and below. The lead pilot had final responsibility for the 5,000-foot overlap area. Environmental and behavior-shaping factors for the F-15 pilots. The lead pilot that day was a captain with 9 years' experience in the Air Force. He had flown F-15s for over 3 years, including 11 combat missions over Bosnia and 19 over northern Iraq, protecting the no-fly zone. The mishap occurred on his 6th flight during his 2nd tour flying in support of OPC. The wing pilot was a lieutenant colonel and commander of the 53rd Fighter Squadron at the time of the shootdown, and he was a highly experienced pilot. He had flown combat missions out of Incirlik during Desert Storm and had served in the initial group that set up OPC afterward. He was credited with the only confirmed kill of an enemy Hind helicopter during the Gulf War. That downing involved a beyond visual range shot, which means he never actually saw the helicopter. F-15 pilots were rotated through every 6 to 8 weeks. Serving in the no-fly zone was an unusual chance for peacetime pilots to have a potential for engaging in combat. The pilots were very aware they were going to be flying in unfriendly skies. They drew personal sidearms with live rounds, removed wedding bands and other personal items that could be used by potential captors, were supplied with blood chits offering substantial rewards for returning downed pilots, and were briefed about threats in the area. Every part of their preparation that morning drove home the fact that they could run into enemy aircraft. The pilots were making decisions in the context of being in a war zone and were ready for combat. Another factor that might have influenced behavior, according to the GAO report, was rivalry between the F-15 and F-16 pilots engaged in Operation Provide Comfort. OPC. While such rivalry was normally perceived as healthy and leading to positive professional competition, at the time of the shootdown the rivalry had become more pronounced.